Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, and welcome to the quarterly All-VR call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Ms. Regina Bowden. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our quarterly All-VR call, and actually the first call for this fiscal year. Thanks for joining us today, and I hope that everyone had a great summer. We have a full agenda, as usual, with some important updates to share. And then after we get through our agenda, we'll open the line for questions and answers as usual. But before we hear about the update, we're pleased today to welcome our guests. And we have guest speakers today, and those speakers are from the research side of ORDES, which we are part of. ORDES, I shouldn't use an acronym, Office of Research, Demonstration, and Employment Support. And these guests will tell you about the Promoting Opportunity Demonstration Project. And then immediately following their presentation, we will have a question and answer session for just the part of the presentation. So without further delay, I am going to turn the line over to our guest speakers on the pod presentation, and that would be Deborah Engler, John Jones, Drew Councilman, and Vincent Pellegrini. And I'll turn the line over to the guest speakers. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Regina. This is Debbie Engler. I'm going to start us off today. I'm just going to do a high-level overview of the Promoting Opportunity Demonstration, and then I'll turn it over to John Jones, one of my colleagues, and he'll talk about the recruitment and enrollment effort that will be starting very soon. So for a little bit of background on, we affectionately call it POD here, the POD project, in the end of 2015, the Bipartisan Budget Act, this was a legislation that came out in the end of that year, this directed us to conduct this demonstration. And in that legislation, there were a lot of specific provisions about what the project and what the design of the demonstration should look like. So I'll start there and then fill out some of the other details. So this was to be, we were instructed that this is to be a $1 for $2 benefit offset. So we'll be testing the offset. And under that offset, it's basically a gradual reduction in benefits as a beneficiary's earnings increase. So if a beneficiary starts earning over a threshold, and our threshold here is the trial work period level of SGA, which for 2017 is $840, or the amount of the beneficiary's impairment-related work expenses. So if they're earning over that threshold amount, then the benefit offset starts to kick in, and their benefits will gradually reduce. So other provisions in the legislation were that entitlement to benefits would terminate if a person has earnings high enough that the offset has resulted in $0 in benefits. The trial work period and extent of eligibility will not apply for participants in POD, and there will be continued Medicare eligibility for 93 months if there is termination of entitlement. So what we'll be doing and what John will get into in more specifics is we're going to start in recruiting and enrolling beneficiaries for this project. We're planning to go live in November 2017, which is coming up in a few short weeks. And we'll be enrolling 15,000 volunteers into our project. And it is an experiment, so we will randomly assign those 15,000 folks into three groups of equal size, about 5,000 each. We'll have a control group, and under that control group, there will be no changes for the beneficiaries in that group. They will continue just as is under usual rules. In one of the treatment groups, as the beneficiary accesses the offset, if they go into full offset where their benefits have been reduced down to zero, there are no changes. Their entitlement gets suspended, but they can go in and out of that status for as long as they're in the POD project. And then we'll have a second treatment group where if the benefit offset, if their earnings are high enough that their benefits are reduced to zero, so in that full offset status, that if they're in that status for 12 consecutive months, their entitlement will be terminated at that point. So what this will look like for our beneficiaries is they will come in, they will volunteer as part of the recruitment and enrollment process. And once they volunteer, if they're in the treatment, in one of the two treatment groups, they will report their earnings on a monthly basis. And we will use that report of earnings to process and calculate the benefit offset. So the way that we have done this is that we use contractors that will work directly with the beneficiaries in this project. So we awarded an implementation contract to a company called Apt Associates in the beginning of this year, and what they will do is work with vocational rehabilitation agencies and work incentive planning and assistance agencies to actually work directly with the participants in this project. We will be offering a POD-specific benefits counseling and assistance with the reporting of earnings. So APT is the prime contractor, and then they coordinate with these agencies to be able to provide those services directly to our beneficiaries. We also awarded, this is a demonstration, so we will have results at the end of it, whether this was a successful test of a new policy or not. So the way that we evaluate that is we contract with a company called Mathematica Policy Research, and they are in charge of all of the data collection efforts, surveying of beneficiaries and administrative data and all of the evaluation that comes along with that. And then what we'll do with that information is publish reports. We'll have an interim report in 2020 that will help to tell us, as of that point in the demo, what sort of impacts are we seeing? Is this what is the benefit offset and the participants in the POD? What is that telling us about this proposed new policy? And then finally, it's a very short demonstration project. We'll be finished in 2021, and so our final evaluation report will come out at that time. And so to talk specifically about some of the sites and the recruitment and enrollment that will be starting and if you're in one of those sites, how that may impact you and beneficiaries coming into your offices, I'm going to turn it over to John Jones. Hi, is John on?
Hi, I'm sorry, I was on mute. I'm here now. All right. So, as Debbie has said, my name is John Jones. I'm responsible for recruitment and the evaluation of the benefit offset. I'm sorry, the POD project, which is testing through a treatment control experiment the benefit offset. That is a 1-for-2 benefit offset. So what's crucial for this demonstration is that we have 15,000 beneficiaries volunteer, and those beneficiaries would be randomly placed into either a treatment group, one of the two treatment groups, or the control group. Now, how we're going to get these beneficiaries or contact them is a matter of a two-prong outreach approach that we're taking. The first approach is a direct approach. We're going to be mailing out roughly 300,000 mailers, packets of information, that will allow the beneficiary to enroll. In the packet of information, there's an informed consent form, a baseline survey, and other information like a trifold brochure and cover letter. But it's the informed consent and the baseline survey that the beneficiary would have to mail back to Mathematica Policy Research. That is the contractor that's in charge of the recruitment of POD. So when the beneficiary receives that packet, they read the material and they decide, yes, this sounds like something they're interested in, then they'd need to sign the informed consent to make sure that they understand the implications of joining, and also the baseline survey. They'd fill out the survey and send that survey in. And for the survey, they can receive $25 for filling out the survey as compensation. So that's the direct prong in the outreach. There's also a second prong. That's the indirect outreach. And that's what we're here primarily to talk to you about today. The indirect outreach is actually trying to have important stakeholders, VRs in particular, to help recruit for POD. And you all are very important because beneficiaries will see you as an authority on SSDI, and you lend legitimacy to the recruitment. So if they come to you and they say, well, is this a legitimate project? You could say, yes, I've heard of it. It's POD, and in a minute I'll tell you how you can get more information. But you would inform them about it, and hopefully if it's right for them, they'll volunteer. All right, so how can we provide information to you about POD? Well, on November 15th at 2:30 Eastern Time, there's going to be a webinar. This webinar basically will just inform you about POD and some of the details and how you can help in the recruitment effort for POD. The contractor, Mathematica, is sending out invitations already. We have invites that will be going out soon. All right, so now you may be saying, what areas are we recruiting from? And we're recruiting from 8 states across the United States. And in some of the states, we're only recruiting from an area within that state. So let me tell you the states that are participating. We've got Alabama, California, Connecticut, Maryland, Michigan, Nebraska, Texas, and Vermont. All of Alabama, all of Connecticut, and all of Vermont will be participating in the recruitment effort, that is the entire state. For some of the other states, like California, Maryland, Michigan, Nebraska, and Texas, there's only going to be counties within the state. I could go through the counties, but you could probably learn more about that through our contractor's outreach to you, but not all of those states will be involved in the recruitment. All right, so now you probably are wondering, well, what kind of beneficiaries are you looking for? So the type of beneficiaries that we are going to target for this project are primarily workers, that is, DI beneficiaries that are designated as primary workers in our administrative records. We are not recruiting children who receive DI. It's only primary workers, so if the person is duly entitled, we're not going to recruit that person in. But they are allowed to have or receive both SSDI and SSI, so they can be concurrent beneficiaries. They just can't be dual beneficiaries, that is, receive it on their own record and as well as, let's say, a dependent child. The beneficiaries will also have to be in that catchment area, and they also have to be a current beneficiary. That is, they're currently receiving benefits. They cannot be in the process of a CDR being worked So anybody that has an open CDR will not be able to participate. And if the beneficiary is moving out of the country or is out of the country now, living in a foreign county or country, then they will not be allowed to participate. So that's pretty much it for the type of beneficiaries, the recruitment areas, and our direct and indirect outreach for POD. So with that, I will pass this back to the host of this meeting.
All right, thank you. Operator, we're going to go ahead and open up the call just for questions on POD for the presenters. So if anyone has questions just for POD, feel free to call in now.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, please press star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. We'll take our first question from Eugenia Cox with the State of Oregon. Please go ahead.
Hello. I have one question. Is this going to affect any of the other states that are not participating?
What was that question again? Not if they're not participating?
If we are not one of the states that is participating in this, is it going to affect us?
Most likely not. Beneficiaries do move around the country, but you probably will not be affected by fraud.
And then if in the states like California and Texas, are we looking at a large area of those states, or are we just looking at a county or two kind of?
Well, actually, for California, there's three counties. It's Los Angeles, Orange, and San Diego. And in Texas, we're talking about Bexar, Dallas, and Tarrant counties.
I'm just trying to get an idea of how big of an area in those large states.
Right. Yeah, I can understand that, yeah.
Okay. That was all my questions. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thank you once again. As a reminder, that is star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. It appears there are no further questions at this time.
All right. Thank you so much for having us on.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you. We received several calls from various states about this, so we appreciate you guys coming on to give everyone the information that they needed. Thank you again. Okay, this is Danielle. I just have a couple cost reimbursement updates before I turn it over to Raquel and Shada. You all would have received the blast regarding the updates to the portal, so you saw the changes. You should be seeing your denials. You should be seeing SGA date. One thing I want to mention about that is there was a glitch as far as the SGA date, and it wasn't showing up for some of the cases that were denied. That is something that they're going to correct next month, and as always, when those corrections are made, you'll get another email blast letting you know any changes that were made and updates, but that is one of the things that you may have noticed. As always, if you see any other issues, please reach out directly to the VR help desk so that we can take a look at those and stay on top of all of the things that you guys are seeing on your end. I want to thank those VRs that have been helping us, and thank you all, first of all, for bearing with us in this transition. We appreciate when we reach out to you, we ask you for certain screenshots of the screens that you see because it's a little different on our end, and all of those things help systems identify and correct the problem. I'm going to turn it over to Raquel, who has some reminders. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Raquel. Just three quick reminders. For current earnings, we now receive updates on the 15th of each month. So that's a good thing. When we're working the claims, we don't have to do a lot of, well, we still do 220s, but because those earnings are there and we're receiving them much faster, that helps everyone, you and us. Additional requested information, a reminder in regards to that, when you receive requests from any of the technician or analyst, C3s, C7s, PVRs, that information must be faxed directly into the portal so it can be automatically assigned to the claim. I know that on some of the letters you are still seeing the fax number at the bottom. That fax number is only to be used for those, a few VRs who at this moment don't have access to the portal. That's it. Other than that, if we receive it via our fax or our mail, we will contact you and we will destroy it so you can do it the correct way. For the cost formula, I need for you, and no one has sent in any, so this is just an FYI for anyone who has already asked questions in regards to it. All of the RSAs must be attached to the cost formula. I do need all that information in order for me to review and to approve the cost formula for fiscal year 18. And that's for any fiscal year, but it's been asked a couple of times, so I just wanted to put that out there. And that's all I have. I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Shada Roper.
Good afternoon, everyone. As Danielle stated earlier, and as we've been saying via email and other messaging, thank you so much for bearing with us on this new system. We've had some glitches, but it's definitely coming along slowly but surely, but it's coming along. These are reminders for the VRs. We are still receiving VRs that are uploading the 199s with costs for us to input. And if you are using the JMRO ticket tracker or the XML, and we know that it's in the portal handbook and the portal guide, if you can use the XML, please make sure you are the ones inputting those costs. It slows us down, and we know the screens are still giving problems. So if you are doing it manually, we, of course, understand that. But we're having the same screen issues that you're having, and it will time out on us, and it takes us a long time to input all those costs when you have pages and pages of costs. So if you're able to have XML or JMRO and have such a system for that, please use that system so that we can process your claims as timely as possible. In addition, we also have a few VRs who are using code 186, Other, which is the RSA code for Other, and then 121 Other, which is the FSA code for Other. We cannot have claims where every single cost is Other. That will cause us to have an alert in our system, and then we will select it for PVR, or the system will select it for PVR, and that requires some auditing. So we're going to ask for the receipts, and if all the receipts don't say Other, you stand a chance of having all those direct costs denied or that claim denied. So please put in the correct cost so that it makes it easier for all of us. If you, by chance, are having problems and you had the problem from before with the other costs, we shouldn't be experiencing that anymore. Please reach out to the help desk and let us know if that's the case, but we don't know of any such thing occurring at this time. And that's all that I have for today. I'll turn it back over to Danielle.
We can open up the line for questions.
Thank you. Once again, that is star one if you'd like to ask a question. Again, please press star one if you'd like to ask a question at this time. We'll take our first question from Eugenia Cox with the State of Oregon. Please go ahead.
I'm always first. I don't know if that's good or bad. A question about... there was a glitch in one of the reports for the payments already made to me, and I don't know, and thank you to Alexis, who was, I think her name was Alexis, that helped me identify where that problem was. We had to narrow it down after several screens, but how long does it take to repair? In this particular case, there was one payment that stuck. And I've been looking, and it's been about 3 days, and I don't know how long a repair takes. Is that something that we have to wait for a long time for, or is that something that's going to be addressed right away?
Hi, Eugenia. This is Katie Strivinger. How are you?
Good. How are you?
So
So you had a unique situation. We had a case stuck in a status that was not letting it display on the report in the portal. The fix we're going to do is we're going to have it switch to another status that will let you pull that display. That on our side requires our systems team to manipulate the data in order to get it to display. We have no control over how long that takes. Like, if they can do it, you know, the next night they will. If they can't, it could take up, you know, a week. It just depends on the workload and the things they're trying to fix at the same time. We try to fix major items, you know, that affect more than one VR or that affect more than one report at the same time, you know, first. So please be patient, but I have no, you know, there is no quick turnaround. I don't have a date that if I report it by this date, it's fixed in 24 hours. We are.
Okay.
We fix things as systems can get to it.
Okay.
And but then we do, the other, you know, thank you for helping us find the core problem that we will be fixing. So.
Yeah, it's like I said, Alexis did a really good job directing me to try to find where that problem was. And it was a one particular day. And the other thing is that, oh shoot, I just lost my train of thought. When we're submitting when we have an inquiry, I've been sending it directly to the VR help desk because I'm afraid that when we have a denial is where I need to start. I've been submitting it to the VR help desk because I'm afraid if I resubmit that claim that the individual person that made a mistake on that denial is going to get that claim again and that there's going to be a mistake in the denial. We've been getting a lot of our denials turned around. I don't know if any of the other states have been having that problem, but we have to go through the effort of trying to determine whether we need to resubmit it or we need to get the question answered. So I didn't know if this was – I've heard from a few other states that there have been a lot of denials and that these denials are not correct. So I didn't know if people were looking at that.
Hey, Eugenia, this is Raquel. The only thing we can do is what you have been doing, which is because keep in mind that the help desk is Shada and myself, so and we're not the people that actually work the claims initially. But when you all, any VR has any questions in regards to a claim that was denied for any reason, submitting it through the help desk is fine.
Okay. And then you're letting me know if I need to resubmit it or not, which helps me a lot because,
That's correct.
You have to go through the effort of trying to resubmit it. So it's just been a lot of extra work, and I didn't know if people were looking at the initial people that are processing the claims to just say, hey, you need to look a little closer or – I don't know what the process is when we're looking at the claims in the portal. So.
Hi, Eugenia. This is Danielle. The process is, well, our QA process depends on certain cases are randomly selected for QA. However, when those cases that you're referring to, denials, you send them into the VR help desk, what we do is keep track of what the reason was for those denials to see if we see a pattern, if it's something that someone's doing wrong, and we go back to that technician directly if there is an issue. If we see something widespread, we do a group training in our monthly staff meeting. So we do take a look at those and kind of use that information. So we do want you to keep sending those into the help desk.
Okay, good. I didn't know if I was being annoying or if, you know. Well, I know I'm annoying, but just in general. So then my other question is when you, what's that?
I said, we never think you're annoying.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm annoying, so you guys have to. So the other question is I have, like, for example, several claims that are in April and May. But they have, and it's in the pending list, and they're actually in there with a stop and start payment period. And I'm not sure why they're sitting there. They're just sitting there in the pending. I've done all the C3 letters, my justifications and everything of the ones that I have. So I'm not sure what's wrong with those. If there's been a payment period determined, why are they just sitting in the pending list?
The only cases that you should see like that would be, like you said, the ones where they went back and requested additional information. If you see and show that you did fax that information in, send that to the help desk as well. That's also a new process for the staff. When they come in, they have to check those to see that the claims were received. We are reminding them to check those on a regular basis, and they should see them in their queue. So please send those in so we can make sure that if it's a particular staff member, we can make sure that they're doing that.
Yeah, there's about seven of them sitting in there, and I've only received a justification request for a couple of them. So the other ones I'm kind of mystified. Are we just not receiving the requests for justification or what?
So, right, and that's what I want to check. If you can send those work case numbers into the help desk, I want to make sure that your information came through and that there's not an issue there. So as always, like I said before, anytime you see something that doesn't look quite right, definitely let us know and send that in so we can make sure it's not an issue with the system or issue with the portal. We just want to make sure that everything is working properly. So send in the work case numbers for each of those that you're referring to, and Raquel's actually going to take a look at those.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Carly Likes Frostman with Minnesota State Services for the Blind.
Hi, you guys. The biggest question I have is I just needed Raquel to repeat the two last bolt, well, I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time getting this out. Her second and third points. I heard that she said supplemental info must be sent some way, and then you must attach what to the cost formula?
Hey, Carly. I was talking about additional requested information, and that's when you receive documentation from us. Letters from us. It might be a C3 letter saying we want information about SGA or how you all helped to bring that person to gain the earnings that they're making at this point. Any type of request that you receive from us should be faxed directly into the portal instead of you faxing it to us at SSA or mailing it to us or emailing it. The only time
That's why I was confused. So you want us to upload it into the portal or do you want us to fax it?
No, it's the same thing. You get a fax cover sheet. If you look at the ticket portal guide, you'll get a fax cover sheet that will assign those documents directly to the claim that they're dealing with. So it is considered faxing, but it actually gets uploaded to the portal. That's your way of doing it.
Okay, but we still use a fax machine.
Correct.
Okay, got it.
And then I was talking about the cost formula, fiscal year 18. Whoever is working on the cost formula submits that information to me. And, again, it can be emailed, mailed, or faxed to me. I don't need all three. I just want to make sure that everyone includes all of their RSA 2 and the RSA 113 for the prior fiscal year.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We'll now move on to our next question from Jay Morrow with Morrow Consulting.
Hello. I saw that, or heard that you had mentioned that there are some states that are sending in all their expenditure records, say other costs for the codes. Is it possible to get a list of the states that are doing that? Because I've been working with the agencies that are using Tracker to try to make sure that all of those get coded with the appropriate codes. And I thought I'd gotten them all, but if you're getting some from Tracker states that still are listing all the costs as other, I'd like to know about that and figure out how we can address that.
Sure, Jay, we'll send that to you.
Okay, and then if any states, happen to notice that their records are all other costs, or say 186, or are blank in that field, just you could let me know as well, and then we can work to try to get that resolved. And then the other thing I just wanted to mention. That you talked about that new file for the payments. If you want to be able to download that file from the portal and upload that into Tracker, you'll have to let me know. And I have an update for that, but I need to know which states are actually using that functionality, and then I will send an update to your IT people. So just shoot me an email. Thank you.
Thank you. And then move on to our next question from Deborah Bradle with Delaware Blind.
Yeah, hi. I kind of had already put it into the chat session. It was about when we send in the cost formulas, what needed to be attached. But it looks like someone responded and said both the RSA 2 and RSA 113.
Yes, ma'am. That's it.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Welcome.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question over the phone lines, please press star 1. We'll now take our next question from Susan Teachin with Department for Aging and Rehabilitation Services.
Yes, my question was actually answered. I, too, was confused when Raquel said we're supposed to upload the information through the portal, and then she said we are not supposed to fax them anymore. I was just a little confused because the portal generates a fax form, and then you actually do end up faxing. But that's been clarified, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, there are no further questions in the queue. However, once again, as a final reminder, that is star 1.
This is Raquel. I see a question in the chat that I just wanted to go over. If you have a claim that was paid and then you see it being reduced to zero, 9 times out of 10 or 10 times out of 10, it's probably a canceled claim. So it's not the Treasury that has reduced it to zero. It is a claim that was canceled. So it may have been paid. It may have been paid by a technician or analyst, and then when it was QA'd, we realized that it shouldn't have been paid, so the payment is canceled before you all get it, and we have to go through trying to recoup it from you. So that's the reason for that.
Thank you. And it appears there are no further questions in the queue at this time.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for making this call. The next call is next year, January 9, 2018, 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. If anyone did have any additional questions that they didn't get answered or they didn't ask, please feel free to reach us on the VR Help Desk.
Hi.
Thank you, and that does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect.